This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
It's Long Shots, golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you for the Rocket Classic. Don't you call it the Rocket Classic. Rocket Classic.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, did that mess with my head already today.
Yeah.
Too late. Too late for the column up at VSiN.com.
Yeah. Is it Wes? Yes. Man, did I have to do a full deep dive on this? Because we are not it's not rare, obviously, on the PGA Tour for sponsorships to change. And I was like, oh, this must be the half-assed, like, Rocket Mortgage pulled out. They don't have a new sponsor yet, so we're just going to, like, keep this bland name. But no. No, everybody, it is the Rocket parent company that is rebranding themselves. So I hate that I know this much about this to tell you, but I, due to graphics purposes this morning, Wes, I had to figure this all out.
Well, yes. Remember this was the Quicken Loans, of course, many years ago when they used to have that in D.C., which the former name of Rocket Mortgage, now headquartered in Detroit, of course, Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, runs this company. So yet another change. It'll always be Rocket Mortgage to me, I guess.
Okay, there we go.
You may know it as my Enmar, but it'll still be Burma to me, like Jay Peterman says in Seinfeld.
We'll figure out, what this is, what their new company is all about, I'm sure, down the line here. There's going to be commercials or something,
That's a good point. And hopefully not nearly as dramatic as the Travelers Insurance commercials that we got to see all last weekend. My God, Travelers, pipe it down a little bit. It's incredible. We called Secret Service. Don't worry, sir. Like, they're on the way, like, to help you out with whatever insurance issues you have. I'm sure whoever calls Travelers Insurance, you'll get straight access to the Secret Service, guaranteed.
Well, let's go ahead and put a bow on that event. And Wes, we have said this before here on this podcast. It is very hard to get an outright home, so we don't really care how it happens. And the fact that it happened on the person that I have declared the biggest loser on the PGA Tour, collapsing on hole number 18 to get you an outright home, just makes it that much more sweeter. Everybody listening out there, if you continue to bet Tommy Fleetwood, you deserve what you get from here on out. Like, I'm just telling you, you deserve it. I don't feel sorry for you. It is what it is. This guy is just a loser. Top 10 Tommy. Bet the top 10s all day. Top 10 Tommy. Don't you keep betting those outrights. I don't feel sorry for you. I had people tweeting at me going, like, you got to be kidding me. How did this happen again? I'm like, what do you mean how it happened again? It's Tommy Fleetwood. What do you mean? Of course it happened again with Tommy Fleetwood. But Wes, doesn't matter. It gets Keegan Bradley home. And that money still hits your account all the same.
So we're all going to line up and bet Tommy Fleetwood at Royal Portrush, right, in a few weeks. You know that's going to happen with at least some. I'm trying to resist the urge. But, yeah, had Keegan Bradley and Russell Henley up there all day. Henley really kind of tentative, I thought, on the back nine. It's like he was playing like he had a two-shot lead. It's like, boss, you got to go and get it, man. Lock up that Ryder Cup spot. By the way, he moves up to fourth in the points, so Henley would be on the team today. But Captain America might have to pick himself as Player America for the Ryder Cup with Keegan Bradley. Made that 64-footer on the ninth to kind of stay in the mix. I think they were all tied going to the back nine, Fleetwood, Bradley, and Henley. Then Fleetwood got a two-shot lead. Then Bradley, I believe, on number 15 on that short par four, he ends up making about a 38-footer. So he cuts the lead to one and just stiffed it on 18, just an absolute great wedge to 6 feet and made it. And the crowd was with him, of course, because he's originally from the state of Vermont. He is a New England guy, so he's a Boston sports fan through and through. So they were all rooting him on. He won this event a couple years ago, ran away from Ches Reavie at the end, and then this time he comes in the back door. So look, Keegan Bradley, and he got asked by Amanda Bionis of CBS, are you going to pick yourself? He was just like, go USA. It's like, he's got to pick himself for the Ryder Cup team. Are there 12 better American golfers right now than Keegan Bradley? I don't think so.
Nope. I got to thinking about it too. And it's one of those deals where if he plays himself on to this team, which it seems like he has at this point, I mean, I know you don't want to, but do you just recuse yourself for being the captain and just like, cause like, how do you pick that you're going to play and not play? It's just
come on,
like,
up, Tiger. Come on, yeah, up, Tiger.
Just, exactly. It just gets so sticky. So I don't know. I mean, Kelly, you don't ever want to pass up being able to be the Ryder Cup captain. But I mean, at the same time, it it was already a little wonky, and now the way that he has played and what he has done makes it incredibly wonky.
Think it's fine. Wait, wait, captain in play. What? It's not like the captain's doing that much. I mean, he's setting the matchups and the lineups like the day before. It's not like he's doing that much besides that.
That is the whole thing. What do you mean? That's the whole damn point.
It's not like it takes 12 hours a day for the captain to figure that stuff out. Like he'll be fine. He'll be fine doing that in play. I think Keegan should absolutely do both. And just to clear something up, I did say on the pod last week I reserved the right to add Keegan Bradley. Of course, I added Keegan Bradley once Wes had that number that he showed me. The only point I made last week was don't bet him at 25-1. But if you did, I guess I bet you're pretty happy still today.
By the way, what you did mention, though, Keegan Bradley does have his vice captains already set, that being Jim Furyk, Webb Simpson, Brant Snedeker, or Kevin Kisner.
Yeah,
one of those guys can take over the reins.
Yeah. Put your old asses to work a little bit more. I ain't doing anything out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, the setting of the lineup becomes weird now. The whole, like, it's all weird. Like, it's all weird now when you're a part of it, you know? So,
Okay. So I'll answer it more seriously. Even though I do think he could do both, I would much rather see, at this point, I'd rather see him play over captain. Because I don't think there's that many better American golfers than him right now. He should be left off that team.
It's like Jim Furyk's going to be a captain eventually anyway with what he accomplished in his career. Let him do it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm team new captain if Keegan plays, because I actually want Keegan to play. Like we said, I think that he is definitely one of the 12 best dudes out there right now, but don't have the weight of trying to figure out, well, do I put myself in the lineup or do I not? Or do I play myself with this person or not? Or whatever. It's like, man, that just adds a whole bunch of nonsense that doesn't need to be. Hand that over, like you said, Wes, to any of those other guys who would be perfectly fine at this. They are all been around forever, know the game very, very well. Okay, so we move on to Detroit here. Again, the Rocket Classic. It is a scoring fest, birdie fest course that is not very long, not very tough. No penal rough, the whole nine yards here, Wes. So it is the ultimate kind of like grip it, rip it, and see who can put it closest and hopefully make some birdies here. So it'll be interesting from my standpoint to see what you guys emphasize or didn't here, because I made a model that I think is just very, very one-sided on all of this, but I think that's how I want to bet this tournament. But tell us a little bit more about what these dudes are going to see there.
Yeah, Donald Ross design all the way back in 1916 does have the back to front slopes like a lot of his greens do on various courses that they play on the tour. Par 72, 73, 70. It is tree lined. Like you said, Matt, not a lot of hazards. There's a mixture of different cuts of rough. I think the biggest one is four inches thick, bluegrass, but they can chop it out of there. This has not affected these guys necessarily. 35 yards on average are the fairways. They're bent POA. The greens are also bent POA. 50-50 mix, smaller side, about a little bit over 5,000 square feet. 12 on the stint, PGA Tour average. So not a lot of hazards here. There's like 87 bunkers, and the big hitters can carry them very easily. And there's just one water hazard, by the way, here at Detroit Golf Club. 14th hole. It is a combination of two courses, but the South course only has one hole on this course, the first hole, which will function as the tournament's third hole. And there's a little bit of rerouting. Just look at the scorecard that's included there at VSiN.com. Front nine is played a little bit easier than the back nine historically because it's about 100 yards shorter. If you're looking for any comp courses, the other Midwest courses, TPC Deer Run, where you have the John Deere Classic, TPC Twin Cities, where you have the 3M Open, Sedgefield, where you have the Wyndham, a couple of those Canadian Open courses in recent years, too. The one we just saw a couple weeks ago, TPC Toronto at Osprey Valley, Oakdale, those are some ones. I have in my write-up at VSiN.com, which just got posted, every hole there's a flyover, the ABC affiliate in Detroit, Channel 7 actually provides a flyover hole by hole. So I always like to put those now in the columns so you can kind of see, okay, the layout, you know, and because it's really weird to like look at a scorecard or look at a sheet that just says, okay, these are what the greens are like. You know, this actually shows it. So we do that. It is going to be a little bit cooler weather, by the way, in Detroit this week. They're 97 the first 2 days of this week. So they've had a heat wave all up and down the East and the Midwest. It's actually warmer in Detroit than it is in Las Vegas as we record on a Tuesday. Temperatures are going to cool. It's still going to be really humid, but Thursday and Friday, you're probably going to get some rain. I think there's an 80% chance, so you're going to get some rain, some stray thunderstorms. So we'll see how long that postpones the activity, but it is going to be nice and humid there, as you would expect in the summer in the Midwest.
And Kelly, as we look at the odds board here, we know coming out of a major and then an elevated event, it is going to be a little bit of a downfield, though better than we've seen in recent years. But Colin Morikawa at the top, Patrick Cantlay, Keegan Bradley, Ben Griffin, Cam Young, Hideki. And then it's going to be a bunch of the mid-tier guys that we have been talking about, you know, here on the podcast for a very long time. So the upper tier guys, not there outside of Morikawa and Cantlay. And with the field being as down and Keegan playing like he has, his odds have plummeted. Ben Griffin, one of the better, more consistent players on tour here for the last few months, his odds are way down at numbers we'd never thought we'd ever see next to Ben Griffin. So it is an interesting way of navigating this week, because we talk about this often, Mr. Bidlin, which is the courses is what really separates these dudes. And when we get these courses that people can light up, I'm not going to say anybody in this field can win. I think that is hyperbole. But what I will say is there are maybe 25% more players that we honestly can talk ourselves into thinking can win this than any given normal week. And maybe that number is closer to 40 or 50% more, because again, these are all the best golfers in the world. And if the course is easy, they can all just go absolutely destroy it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is always the, you know, kind of the warning with the Birdie Fest events. If you're going to get into that, at least for me, it's always dial back how many and how much money I'm putting into finishing position markets and matchups and stuff like that, because the variance that can come into play with guys going low for a round or two or more can really get wonky with that stuff. So it's a lot of play some outrights, cover it with some top fives, and call it a day pretty much for me. And that's how I approach these Birdie Fests. They are you just hope to throw a dart and throw the right one, right? You have it land under the right spot.
Yeah, that is I'm not going to say it's a spray and pray type situation for me this week, but it is certainly a more outrights than normal. I have one top 10 bet on a guy and then that's it, right? So it's a little bit different for me than it normally is, for sure.
I also think it's just easy, like, to look past the top of the board. I don't know where you guys started at, but I mean, Morikawa just not in form right now. Cantlay's interesting. I think he'd be the most interesting to me near the top, but not enough to get on board with that. You already mentioned Ben Griffin's number just not being anywhere close to where we've kind of seen him usually after his entire career. Keegan Bradley, I mean, under 20-1 is pretty wild. So it was pretty easy for me to head down right to the middle of the board.
This is the history of this event. We've only had 6 years. It moved here to Detroit in 2019. It was previously the Quicken Loans National that was in D.C., as we mentioned earlier. But you've seen long shots win here. I think the inaugural event, Nate Lashley, was 250-1. Cam Davis, when he won here for the first time in 2021, 150-1. But you've also seen Bryson at 7-1, Finau at 14-1, Ricky Fowler at 14-1 when he beat Colin Morikawa and Adam Hadwin in that playoff 2 years ago. So long hitters, tended to flourish here. I think Taylor Pendrith and Cameron Young were runners up to Finau in 2022. They're both big hitters. Minwoo Lee was part of that tie for second behind Cam Davis last year. So, you know, bigger hitters have historically done so, but that doesn't mean, like, it's not all big hitters. Like, almost anybody, any style of player, I think, can win. Like, when you're saying anyone can win, well, maybe not anyone can win, but any style of player can win. You can win hitting dead-eye approaches here, just like you can win bombing it and gouging it, just like you can win putting the lights out. So there's a lot of various styles that can win on this golf course.
I emphasized driving distance, par five scoring, birdie or better percentage, and opportunities gained. I went basically just a heavy scoring model this week. I think that approach, while definitely important, and I will not say that it is not important, but if the rough isn't all that penal and the greens are small as it is and all of that, like, I mean, I think it's it's going to come down to who hits it down there the furthest, who has the shortest iron, and then that's going to be the biggest difference here, not necessarily who is who's really playing their irons all that great right now. So I didn't use approach as much as I normally do in any given week. So that's kind of, for me, opportunities plus, like just a little bit of more of a separator there, which is inside of 10 feet as opposed to inside of 15 feet. Birdie or better gained, driving distance, score, strokes gained on par fives, and then the couple little tiebreaker things there, just like strokes gained on easy courses. Wanted to see who's done well on these easy courses, on these ones that you can really get after, and then just, you know, overall weighted strokes gained total against the field in this course. See who's been just kind of getting it done out there a little bit. Kelly, did I go different than you? Did you go heavy scoring? Did you emphasize approach maybe more than I did?
I'm going to guess I emphasized approach a little bit more than you, but it's a very heavy scoring model. You basically rattled off everything that I included. Off the tee, driving distance, yes, approach. Yes, I did factor in some of the shorter proximity ranges, just because we do expect to see a lot of short irons and wedges here for these guys this week. But it's opportunities gained, birdie or better, par five scoring. Those three I emphasized very heavily for this week. And I did add in some putting stuff, just to overall strokes gained putting. We do have the blend on the greens, like Wes talked about. And then, you know, putting within 10 feet punched in there, and then easy courses, like you mentioned, Matt. But this often ends up being a bit of a putting contest. So just wanted to at least have that factored in at least a bit.
Yeah, one of the things I do want to point out, and we'll get Wes, what you put in your model here, is if you use any of the sites that we talk about on here, just remember that the more factors that you put in, the fewer rounds that you're going to be able to get results from. And so I just want to point that out for sure, because if you go in and, you know, let's just, our friends over at BetSpurts, who have a fantastic stat collection over there and models that you can build. However, if you start going crazy on stuff, which is like, okay, scoring conditions, easy, driver heavy, like less penal rough, this, that, and there, like you add all these factors and you get it out, whatever, you're going to end up getting to a point where like guys only have four rounds, like, yeah, or like eight rounds, stat cast stuff and things like that. You literally have to almost bring it out to like 2 years worth of data in order to even get someone that has like a 20 or 30 round sample size or something. So just remember that as you're going in, and I don't say that, I'm not saying don't do that, but I'm just saying realize that it's going to spit out data where you have a very, very small sample size for the vast majority of these dudes, because there just aren't a whole lot of courses out there on tour that have easy conditions, driver heavy,
and are short,
no penal rough, short courses, yeah, all the different stuff like that. Like it becomes a very micro sample size here. And so it's almost like batter versus pitcher stats. If you do baseball stuff and whatever, it's like most of it is just such small sample size that it doesn't matter. It's all noise. So if you want to do that, you might need to extend out the range that you're using here and just more use a holistic overall approach, yeah, on these golfers as opposed to who's doing anything recently.
One thing on that, I think that's better to do those filters that you're talking about, Matt, when it's like a major championship. Mm-hmm. When you're really trying to find, okay, what is the separation here? Like, who can, mm-hmm, really win a major championship? Who can really win the U.S. Open? Who can really win the Masters or any other major? I think you want to be more holistic at a place like this, because, mm-hmm, there's a lot of guys that are going to shoot low, and there's going to, mm-hmm, be guys that you've never heard of that might be rookies on the tour that don't have a lot of rounds. It's like, who the hell is this guy? I've never heard of him. And then you have to kind of go look it up. So I don't like to do as many of the filters on like general events. I only would like to do those for like, you know, the real either short, small field signature events or major championships, and that's it. I think your regular boilerplate PGA Tour events or any other events, you want to be a little bit more wide-ranging, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, I only pull up a model to kind of give myself a shot of the holistic stuff, but I have to, in order to get any sort of sample size that I feel is good for me, I have to back it out 18 months. And so if you back it out 18 months, again, you hear us talk about it all the time, guys, where guys are playing really, really good over their last five or six tournaments, maybe not so good over their last 36 tournaments or 50 tournaments or something. So I'm just, I'm just looking at maybe what type of golfer might fit this type of course. And then I have to go in and do more research and do more digging and all of the stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's tough to get any sort of sample size unless you're pulling it out 18 months or so, something like that. Kelly, I don't know if you ever make models that really, really dial it in like that, but I've had somebody come to me and be like, oh, look at my model, blah, blah, blah. And I say, bro, did you see that? Like, most of those guys only have like 4 rounds of strokes gained data. So it's basically, you're just talking about one tournament's worth of data on these people.
Yeah. I think it's something that as like you said, these sites we use, I can speak personally. I'm going to guess that others have run into this as well. You'll learn, I guess, the hard way. But like, you start building these and there's so much great data to pull off of that you think, oh, well, this is going to matter. It's going to matter. Why wouldn't this matter? Let me pull in a bit of this, pull in a bit of that. But yeah, it goes back to exactly what you're saying. You end up punching in too much stuff and it's pulling from tournaments that are too far back. I do think that this course is, kind of unique in just the sense of just how many courses do we talk about on the PGA Tour calendar where it's like, hey, it's short, but you're going to use a driver on almost every hole that's a par 4, mm-hmm. par 5. Like that's, I mean, usually we're talking, well, it's a shorter course, you're going to club down for a little bit here. Like, no, it's driver pretty much everywhere. It's not a par 3.
Yeah. So it's just, interesting stuff, needless to say, like to get all the data, but I just wanted to make sure that people are getting a sample size that makes sense as opposed to like just looking at the stuff and doing all that. Okay, Wes, we explained what was in ours. Did you do anything differently with yours?
Kind of a combo of what you guys did. Mm-hmm. Maybe the only thing I emphasized a little bit more, I did do some of the proximity buckets, maybe a little bit more than the general approach stuff that I would usually do. And that's 75 to 100, 100 to 125, 125 to 150, because this is driver wedge fest is basically what this is. It's not that hard around the green here, even though the greens are maybe on the smallish side on average. I think it's not difficult to gain around the green. It's difficult to gain on the greens, actually. 10th most difficult greens over the last 5 years because you have those back to front slopes, and some of these slopes kind of complicate things for the guys, or maybe they overthink them. But 40% of the strokes are gained with the putter. So I think you wanted to look with that. And I mentioned Bent Poa. It's about a 50-50 mix here. So kind of similar to what you saw, I guess, at least somewhat at River Highlands, where the Poa is not bumpy Poa. It's not the West Coast Poa like at Torrey or like at Pebble Beach. So it runs pretty smooth. 12 on the stamp, average speed. So I did the same things as you guys in terms of like the general stuff. Strokes gained easy. I did strokes gained par 5 just to kind of see, okay, who's getting a birdie opportunity every single time. Mm-hmm. And then I did do strokes gained par 4, 350 to 400, very, very small, because you do have 4 of the 10 par 4s that are less than 400 yards. So, you've got those short ones where they're not quite drivable, but you're going to have kind of like an awkward wedge yardage. So mm-hmm. I think, there's a kind of a different way to play those. So I definitely wanted to look at that at least a little bit.
All right, Kelly Bidlin, we have thrown the stuff in there. Our models have spit things out at us. What did you sift through and end up on? All right, Wes, having a little bit of internet issues here with Kelly Bidlin. So let's just go ahead and get your plays. What did you end up on here for the Rocket Classic?
Yeah, I hesitate to give out who I'm starting my card with, being how he played last week, but I'm going to give him one more chance. I'm going to go Cameron Young, 28-1.
Of course you are.
Yes,
I
can't quit him.
You have to.
I can't quit him. I guess he
had me. I would be disappointed if you were not on him this week.
He had me at hello, I guess. But he had me at goodbye last week because it was goodbye down the leaderboard. He was 5-under in the first round. I was like, okay, here we go. And then started to really drive the ball very erratically and T52 finish. But, maybe it was a U.S. Open hangover because he was on the periphery of contention. This is a course that you think Taylor made for him. He was second here in 2022, sixth in 2024, had consecutive top 4 finishes. So I don't know if he's totally back, but I don't think it was totally a fluke either. I just think, bad tournament last week. So that's one of them things that I think is very hard when you're a regular golf bettor week to week is outright is like when to jump on and when to jump off. And you don't always want to jump off after one bad finish. So I'm giving Cameron Young one more whirl here at 28-1
for everybody. Well, I pick on Wes obviously just because it's a we all have our golfers that we've played a ton. But for what it's worth, he's no lower than eighth in any version of the models that I ran. So I mean, he is. Yeah, he models out so well for this.
Yeah, you would think he'd drive the ball pretty well here, and he could succeed here. I understand if people maybe have a little PTSD betting him, but Cameron Young 28-1, and then another guy I hit on actually in one of the Midwest events last year. I know we had him at the John Deere Classic. Davis Thompson at 40-1, who was a four-way tie here for second here last year behind Cam Davis, who's now won this event twice. Those are his only two PGA Tour wins, by the way. Second for strokes gained approach, third for strokes gained tee to green last week, but he was only T25 at the Travelers. And why was he T25? Because he was 65th out of 67 on the greens. Of the guys that continued, because there were several withdrawals last week at the Travelers. Maybe a couple injuries, by the way, a couple... Hey, I just played Oakmont, and I'm just burned out on golf, so I'm not going to do it anymore. So Davis Thompson was well down there in terms of the putting, but the ball striking was terrific. Very open course, played here well here last year. I think he can do it again. And then a couple others right in that range. This one was at 44-1 this morning. I went with Wyndham Clark, who has had an eventful last couple of weeks. Remember, he took out the frustrations at Oakmont on the locker room at the U.S. Open, and then he kind of apologized last week before the Travelers, but kind of didn't. I don't know. Some were satisfied, some were not. But T17 last week, 64 in the first round, 66 in the third round, eighth here in 2022, 17th in 2019. He's one of those guys, you know, wide-open golf course where you can just rip it off the tee. Yeah. I think that this is a place where he could play well, and you are getting – I know that he slipped from his peak, but you are getting a relatively recent U.S. Open champion in the mid-40s in a very downfield. So Wyndham Clark, I think, could go well here. And then another guy who's a former U.S. Open champion, at least in recent years, that maybe starting to turn it around at least a little bit, and that's Matt Fitzpatrick at 45-1, who – made the caddy change back in March. He was with Billy Foster all those years. They won the U.S. Open together, actually, at Brookline at the Country Club 3 years ago. New caddy on the bag, Daniel Parrott, who's been with a variety of different players on the tour. But Fitz is starting to improve a little bit. He's made 7 of his last 8 cuts, top 10 at the PGA. I think he was T17 last week at the Travelers. Sense of urgency now for him, because we've been focusing, obviously, with Keegan Bradley, with Captain America going ahead and winning last week. But the European Ryder Cup team is trying to take shape as well. So Matt Fitzpatrick's been, I think, a core guy on that team. And right now, it would maybe be on the outside looking in. So Matt Fitzpatrick at 45-1. And then my longer price guys, I had 3 of them. One guy that just kept popping up in stat after stat was Emiliano Grillo at 80-1, who had a really tough start this year, seemingly has found something, 4 straight top 25s, made 9 of his last 10 cuts. He was the only player in this field, by the way, that was in the top 15 for all the wedge proximity buckets, the 75-100, to 100-125, 125-150. Has played well in these Midwest swing events before, was second and third respectively at the 3M Open over the last few years in Minneapolis, second at the John Deere in 2022. So Emiliano Grillo could be very sneaky here. You worry a little bit about his putter, but man, that iron play is terrific, and it usually is for the Argentine. And
yeah,
then,
I ended up on him, Wes. So
oh,
it's,
did you?
But yeah, both of us will be on him for sure. And it's, I mean, lit up the model for me, and I had to go in and dig to figure out why that was the case. But like, man, these easy courses specifically, his birdie or better percentage and birdie or better gain and opportunities gain, which again, like, at least you're giving yourself the chance to make these birdies and all this stuff like that. I mean, he is inside the top 10 in every single one of those categories. And so, hey, listen, I don't know if he's going to make the putts or not, but if he's giving himself 15 footers and giving himself 10 footers all the time, like, I'll take that. Right. And so, especially at the price there for Griot. So I'm also on Griot there.
Yeah. And this was another guy too. One, when I talk about like the correlated courses, I remember he won, this was a long time ago. He beat Kevin Na in a playoff. Silverado where they have the I don't know what it is, the Fortinet, or it's even a new sponsor. It was the Fry's Open. I forget even the new sponsor. It's the one in Napa, basically, at Silverado. Silverado's got a little bit of a crossover for guys that have won there, guys that have played well there, that have played well in this event historically. So another thing maybe to mention for Grillo. And then I did have to go with some kind of bomber. I've got a couple bombers already in the lineup, a little bit with Clark and with Cameron Young, but this guy, an absolute bomber. He's making his first appearance here, so triple digits, 105-1, Jesper Svensson, the Swede, second in the field for driving distance and strokes gained par 5, third for birdie or better of what I had, fourth in strokes gained off the tee. He's made 11 of 15 cuts in his rookie season on the PGA Tour, but just the one top 10 at the Sony to open. Now, he was T18 in Canada a couple weeks ago, his best result since. Big hitter off the tee. I think he should really like this course. So Jesper Svensson, 105-1.
Go ahead and just go again there, Wes.
All right.
I landed on him as well. One of the things I did was just go in and sort by driving distance alone, and then see the guys that also are in the green in par five scoring, in birdie or better percentage, in opportunities gained, and all of that. And when I do that, Svensson really jumped out of not only the short-term model, but the long-term model as well, which I thought was really interesting. You do have to go in, you got to dig a little bit, guys, with some of these people, but you look, and it's like birdie or better percentage inside the top 20, fourth overall in strokes gained on par five. The driving distance, obviously, there, he's averaging 319 off the tee, but, you know, opportunities gained, he's inside of that as well. And so it's a dude that hits it long, giving himself chances to make the birdies. Now, Wes, is he going to make the birdies? Whatever. We'll figure that out. But you get a triple-digit guy that if he can run hot with the putter for four rounds, or hell, three rounds, and then, you know, we can monetize the ticket. So
yeah.
I have Svensson as well.
Before I get to the last one, a couple guys that were last-minute leave-offs for me. Michael Chorbornson, by the way, is back. He had that wrist issue, but he's been back there working in Detroit. His caddy now is J.J. Jakovec, who used to be Morikawa's old caddy. So, you know, he was kind of established caddy with the major championship player linking up with Chorbornson. So, obviously, I think that's at least a sign of this guy's potential talent. So, he was a guy that was a late leave-off for me. Harry Hall, and I believe we'll get to him momentarily, was also a consideration. If you want to go ahead and jump in actually on that one.
Yeah, Harry Hall, the shortest odds on my card this week at 35-1. I had no idea I was going to end up on Harry Hall. And then the dude's just like destroying the model. And I had to go in and like start to really dig through all of these stats. And it's like, Wes, if it wasn't for driving distance so heavily weighted for me this week, he might have been second or third. I mean, it's just because he's 60th in this field in driving distance. So that kind of pushed him down to seventh, eighth, ninth ish where he's at in these versions of the deal. But like, if he was a little bit longer off the tee, he might have been as high as third or fourth for me. But it's every other thing is like not just green, but bright green. I mean, like, and he's a hell of a putter too. So like, you know, If we believe that somebody who actually is a good putter can run hot on these greens, it shouldn't be too tricky. He's a hell of a putter, you know, one of the better putters in this one as well. So, yeah, Harry Hall, had no idea I was going to end up on Harry Hall. And then here we are.
Every professional win, he just has the three right now, but every professional win he has in the Midwest, including last summer, remember he won the what used to be the Barbasol, but is now the ISCO Championship at Keene Trace down there in Kentucky. So similar type course. To shoot 22 under to win the thing, you're probably going to have to be around the same here. So yep. Harry Hall is going to be a placement guy for me. Maybe I'll add on an outright, but I certainly will have him top 20. Last outright I have Lee Hodges, 110-1. Best finish of 2025, ninth at the RBC Canadian Open a couple weeks ago. Missed several weeks with that rib injury, but slowly returning to form. He actually started 2025 really well. Top 10 at the Sony, top 10 at the Farmers Insurance at Torrey Pines. Doesn't have great form here in Detroit. I think his best finish is in like the 40s here of like three appearances. But Remember 2 years ago, he won the 3M Open in the Twin Cities by 7 shots. So he's capable of going low, I think, in these like birdie fests in the Midwest. And TPC Twin Cities has a lot of similarities, I think, to what we see at Detroit Golf Club. Like I mentioned, the correlated course is TPC Deer Run for John Deere. So, you know, definitely I think you get some carryover with guys that have played well in multiple of those events.
Yeah, so like I said, Harry Hall for me, the next guy on the card, I'm going back to Luke Clanton. You know, you talk about the guys that we've bet a decent amount that hadn't really paid off. He's certainly one for me. Wes, he's third, fourth, and let me put that third. He's third, fourth, and sixth in the three different models that I ran. I mean, you just go in and you see he makes a ton of birdies. He crushes easy courses. Like, he gives himself opportunities to make these. He's inside the top 30 in par five scoring, which we like. We know he's long off the tee. There's just not a lot of a pedigree here yet for Clanton, but that's not to say that we can't see him rattle off a win here, right, against a weaker field. And certainly a course that I think fits his skill set very, very well. So
yeah.
I don't love the number, right? It's like 40 on Clanton, but I mean, if we're going strictly off of the skill set that I emphasized this week for this, he's ahead of a whole bunch of other people, you know, as far as that. So just, I kind of had to play.
It's kind of a horse racing term where you'll hear the term on these telecasts, drop in class. And that's kind of what this is, I think, maybe for Luke Clanton, because now all of a sudden, you know, he missed the cut at the RBC, but that was a better field, and that was a field headlined by Rory McIlroy and a few other major champions. And he was T34 in a signature event at the Travelers that I think he might have got in on a sponsor exemption. But, yeah, like, you know, he's just getting used to still playing on the tour here, because now he's a full-time member of the PGA Tour. This isn't, you know, hey, you play these fall series events, you play the RSM, or you play the Wyndham, or the John Deere, and by the way, he's went in top five in all three of those events, and I think a similar quality field here, so I'm not mad at Luke Clanton, regardless of the number. I'm not mad at it. I think he could play well here in what is a drop in quality of the field.
A guy that I know you and I have played a couple of different times, I think Kelly has placement marketed him, but another just I'm hoping that the field has him back to where he was, let's call it a couple months ago, but Ryan Gerard at 55-1, another guy that, again, just across the board here for the stuff that I emphasized this week, he was just really, really good at every single one of those things that I was looking at, and so hoping he can get a little bit of that form back that we saw when we were betting him a ton there, Wes. But like we said, maybe it's this kind of, okay, change of scenery, lesser field, birdie fest deal, get out there, get your swing under you and get going. But a dude that, really fit the bill for me this week. We mentioned Griot. We mentioned Svensson. The only other guy that I have currently on the outright here, which will make number six for me this week, is Jake Knapp. Again, guys, just you look at Knapp, and it's fourth and fifth in this model, like whatever, and you go in and you see why. I mean, you know why. He hits it a mile. He's really good at making birdies. Now, the problem with him is some of this other stuff, but Wes, like, I'm not really worried about some of the other things this week, because if you're not hitting it long, if you're not making birdies, you're not going to win anyway. So yeah. I don't really care what the other stats are kind of saying to me. And I know that sounds ridiculous when we're talking about golf. Yes, you got to be good at all the stuff. But I mean, let's just put it this way. If you're missing greens, you ain't going to win, right? If you're not long this week and spraying it, then you're probably not going to win. Like, the guys need to be long if they're going to spray it, all these different things. So for me, I kind of just cared about those few things that I mentioned earlier that I put in the model, and Jake Knapp really just smokes all of those. And so see if I can catch him on an up week. The number's so long on him. It's at 80. So, I mean, again, a guy that we know can compete. We've seen him at the top of leaderboards, Wes. He just seems to always kind of have that one bad round, kind of we talk about with some of these other guys. And I don't know, maybe he can put everything together, get it done. You talk about some of your last leave-offs for me. Akshay Bhatia was very tempting to me, certainly a guy that I wanted to play. Look, I'm playing first round leader on Keith Mitchell, but I'm not going back to the well on an outright. But I mean, he's number one in one of the versions of my model. Like, he's ahead of Colin Morikawa and everyone, you know, like everything else. But Keith Mitchell, I just can't do it again. I can't take that ride with Keith Mitchell. I just can't do it. But I am going to play him in a first round leader. The one top 10 bet that I made, which required some research for me, in my last 20 round model, Wes, a guy popped up in eighth named Antoine Rosner.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it. I think
it's Rosner because he's French. So you got to have a little stank on that name there at the end. But Antoine, I played him a couple times on the DP World Tour, and he's gotten home for me, did in Qatar a few years ago. But I understand what you're saying with him.
Yeah, it's like, so I go in and I just went and looked at the stat profile, and it kind of the same thing I was talking about with Knapp, right? Where it's like, okay, T13 for him at the Byron Nelson, he was like negative 1.04 around the green. Again, I don't care about around the green this week. If you're not hitting the if you're off of the greens, then you're not going to win anyway. So like I don't care about that. He was T24 at the RBC, gained across the board there on that thing, and like, you know, just a dude with a monster price tag attached to his name. I don't know if he has what it takes to actually win, but a top 10 price is still very juicy on him. So played the top 10 as opposed to the outright. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'll throw a sprinkle, you know, just in case he goes crazy. But the real bet for him for the purpose of this pod is like a top 10 bet on him.
Yeah, because I wonder, like, these are the type of events, because we know if you still follow the DP World Tour, they have those standings where the top 10 guys that are not already exempt get PGA Tour cards. This seems like one of those events that, like, maybe one of those guys can win. Yeah. You know, because it is a step up in class when you're playing on the DP World Tour and now you're playing against the best in the world. Even in downfields like this, this is stronger than your average DP World Tour field, say for like the events right around the Open, say for like the Irish Open or the BMW PGA, one of their signature events. Like, this field is still stronger. So this because I played a couple of those guys like Chorborn, Olesen, and you know, hadn't gotten there for me, even though he would have been a first round leader a couple weeks ago in Canada. But the Højgaards, like, this seems like where those European players would break through at one of these type of events.
And the very last guy off the card for me, and it's just, again, Wes, I'm falling victim to the thing that you just said, don't fall victim for, which is like, I bet the guy so much and then it's never got home. But like, Kurt Kitayama, like, fits this thing.
I almost played Kurt Kitayama.
Like, to a bill. Like, 317 off the tee. He's 10th in birdie or better gained. He's 21st in opportunities gained. He's 20th in opportunities plus. He's 14th in regular birdie, better percent. I mean, like, he's just every single thing about him, like, screams, I should be playing him. And then...
Well, somebody at Circa Sports really likes him. And, you know, the reason why I held off of that, because it's like, usually if they're the low in the market, I'm like, okay. Because I know that they're taking bigger limits in a lot of places. So it's like, okay, that at least opens my eyes. But Kurt Kitayama is a local here, too. He does live here in Las Vegas and play at UNLV. True. So I wonder if there's a buddy that's got some money.
Right.
And I'm going to bet on my boy, my neighbor here, wherever Kurt lives here in town, and do that. So, but he did kind of match some characteristics. So maybe for insurance, I'll play like a top 30 or something, to have something on him. But he was a guy I looked at very closely.
Yeah, so I don't feel like an idiot if he were to do something with all of that. Kelly will be here with his picks momentarily, guys. But a reminder, all of our picks will be up over on VSiN.com and VSiN.com/subscribe to become a pro subscriber over there so you can get to that picks page and get all of that. Kelly will close things out. But for Wes, I am Matt. Good luck on all your Rocket picks.
All right. Kelly Bidlin here. Fun internet problems. Sorry for the dropout and delay and long shots a little bit. We had to cobble together the end here a little bit. It's okay. You heard Wes, you heard Matt run through all of their bets. Wanted to get on here and at least give you guys all of mine. As always, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for the reviews, ratings, all that good stuff. We appreciate you guys. Couldn't do any of this stuff without you. Head over to VSiN.com, get Wes's write-up, and then all of our plays will be over there as well. I mentioned it earlier in the pod, but with Birdie Fest like this, this is very much a go a little bit lighter for me, going to play some outrights, cover them with some top fives, and not much further down the board. I do have two top 20 bets, though. This week, I'll get those out of the way now. Ben Griffin, I can't ignore the guy any longer. the consistent results that he is putting up, T14, T10, second place, a win, T8, green across the board with strokes gain categories. I can't ignore it any longer. I didn't go outright on Ben Griffin, although I wouldn't hate it. Just the shortened odds on him this week don't feel great to bet into. So I'm going to go a little bit lighter with the top 20 at plus 110. That was over at MGM, I believe. MGM or Stations, plus 110 on Ben Griffin. And then Keith Mitchell, I also bet top 20 this week, plus 188. I think close to 2-1 on Keith Mitchell is a good bet. Look, he's on my outright card too. He is first in birdie or better over the last 16 rounds, ninth in par five scoring. He's a great ball striker. We know he's great off the tee and on approach. That's going to matter this week. He's 11th in distance. We talked about earlier distance really being a factor for us this week. So Mitchell, along with a top 20 bet, he is in my outrights as well. So an outright, a top five and a top 20 on Keith Mitchell. And then the other bets that I have made, Harry Hall, that's the top of my outright card, 36-1 on Harry Hall. Look, not a long guy off the tee. Talked about distance mattering this week. He still was a top 10 model play for me this week. And I don't really mind the lack of distance because he's putting it together with the iron play right now. He's gained in four straight events. That's one of the things that's held Harry back a little bit before in the past. And the one thing he continues to do very well is just putt the ball. He's a top-rate putter in this tournament for me. And if I'm really just looking about making birdies or better on a course that is very scoreable, I don't really care how you get it done. I think the easiest path to that is to hit it long off the tee, have a short approach shot in, and then go up there and make a putt. Harry might have to do a little bit more on approach this week, but with quality approach numbers leading into the event, him having a very, very good putter and consistent putter, I care more about this week. So did start with Harry Hall, 36-1. Talked about Keith Mitchell already, got him at 48-1. I think anything over 40-1 on Keith Mitchell is a good bet this week. I know for those of you that watch the numbers game, listen to this podcast often, you know I got a Keith Mitchell problem, so take it with a grain of salt. Maybe just bet him first round leader. I'll be playing him there as well for sure. But I do like him this week. Max Grazerman next up for me, 40-1. Got him at Grazerman, a very unique kind of mix. If you're not as familiar with his game, a great off the tee player and a great putter, which we don't really have a ton of those on tour. We usually talk about the Keith Mitchells of the world, great off the tee and great on approach, struggle with the putter a little bit, or they're great short game players who maybe not are as long off the tee. Grazerman's one of those odd mixes of strong off the tee game, strong putting. It's all the stuff in between that's been a little bit of concern, but actually over his past five events, he's gained on approach in all five. It's actually been the putter that's been a little up and down over that time. So hopefully he finds it in a place where, we know putting results are, it's actually a difficult location to putt well at, but still it's one of those tournaments with it being a birdie fest that when you look back afterward, so many of the strokes gained on by the winners are made up on the green. So hoping that Grazerman can find that this week. His recent results, T36 at the Travelers, T23 at the U.S. Open, T25 at the Memorial, and T22 at the Charles Schwab. So he's been putting together some consistent results here. Really want to see what his game looks like if he's able to put it all together. And a guy who has putted well in the past. So hopefully he can get that done. He was T31 here last year. And then the last guy on my card, Alex Smalley. I've stayed away from him for a bit now. He was a guy I bet heavily at the beginning of the season. Another great ball striker, a great off the tee, great on approach. Alex Smalley is and has been all season long, putting together some good results. Had a little bit of a dip in the middle of his season, but you know he's kind of back at it now. T13 at the Canadian Open. Yes, he had a miscut at the Charles Schwab, but then you go T28 at the PGA, big time golf there, obviously, and a T5 at Myrtle Beach. He's finding it a little bit more again like he had earlier in the season. So I'm gonna go back to Alex Smalley this week in a course that I think should set up fairly well for him. And you're getting about 60-1 on him. I got 63-1 here in town on Alex Smalley in the outright. So cover that with the top five. Again, that's Harry Hall, Keith Mitchell, Max Grazerman, Alex Smalley in outrights and top fives, Ben Griffin, Keith Mitchell in top 20s. Haven't bet him yet, won't bet him till tomorrow, but short list of first-round leader bets for me right now, Keith Mitchell, Harry Hall, and Alex Smalley. I believe Wes brought him up as well. Emiliano Grillo, probably the first guy I left off my card. He's really rounding into form. I don't hate that play at all this week either. I think it was one of Wes's. Got very close to playing Emiliano. So whether you want to look, I considered him a little bit more for first round leader. I might end up on him there. But fully endorse that bet for Wes this week. So again, all of our bets over at VSiN.com. Go there, check out Wes's article as well for this week. Hopefully this all came together for you this week. Sorry for some of the technical problems we've had the past couple weeks now on Long Shots. Last week was a disaster. I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what the hell happened. Couldn't figure it out. But for Wes, for Matt, they got done earlier. Good job, boys. I'm sure you did a great work. I'm Kelly Bidlin for Long Shots. We will talk to you guys next week.